Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The speed has been terrible. Whoa. Wow.
That's stunning. David Fay here in the booth. We just saw Phil Mickelson. This is a live look at him walking and, I guess, leaving the golf course? Or no, he's just going, I guess, going to 14T because there's Beef Johnston. I don't know that. I mean, that was stunning. And David Fay, talk us through what we just saw.
Well, that is stunning. The last time I saw something like that was at John Daly in the 99 Open at Pinehurst. The rule, it's a two-stroke penalty, but that's basically his way of saying that's it. You know, no mas.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. And let's welcome in Mark Canizzaro, the New York Post, our fine golf writer, also covers the NFL and everything else in between. And Mark, wow. That was a...
Baba Booey.
To call a guy the Roberto Duran of golf is... it's almost a bit much, but what are you going to do? How you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're good. We're just, you know... Poor Brooks Koepka, you know, he had to win the Open on a weekend when a guy basically ran after a moving ball. You know Phil very well. Are we changing our opinion of Phil, that dirty, rotten cheater? I don't think he was cheating. I mean, if the guy, it's not like he tried to kick a ball from under a tree with no one looking, you know what I mean? Like, that was for the world to see.
Yeah, that's not cheating. That's just a classic grade A meltdown is what right. That was. I mean, that's just really, I mean, that, you know, it was, you know, my take on that really is that disappointed me actually more than the act itself was the explanation afterwards. You know, it's a lot of times they say the cover-up is worse than the crime. Not that I think that was an egregious crime. I mean, it was a dumb thing to do, and it was clearly a loss of composure. But these things happen to, you know, everybody in sports and in life. But to stand there afterwards and kind of spin it the way he did, I just thought was a little bit weird. For our listeners who didn't hear his explanation, you know, he kind of said, oh, I knew what the rule was. I just didn't feel like going down and getting the ball. I knew it would be a two-stroke penalty, so I figured I'd just take the two-stroke penalty. You know, what he really should have said was what really was going on in his mind was that he had a brain freeze, and not even a brain freeze. He just had a, you know, he had a frustration moment, and the elements and where his round and his U.S. Open was going. Finally, it all kind of came crashing down on him, and he just kind of snapped for a moment there, you know, and, I wish he'd said that. I had actually, once he got back to his house that he was renting, I had a little text exchange with him right around the time when it looked like the USGA was pondering whether to DQ him or not, and he kind of clarified that he had actually reached out to Mike Davis, the executive director of the USGA, and basically told him, look, you know, I don't want to play if I broke the rule. I should be disqualified if that's how the rule states it. And at the end of his text, he pretty much, you know, he said, you know, not my finest moment was his quote. You know, so I wish he had said that publicly to everybody right off the bat, because I think people would have understood. I mean, everybody knew that the USGA had botched the setup of the course with those couple of holes that were unplayable, 13 and 15, 13 was the one that he, you know, that he had his shenanigans on. So, but instead he kind of made that spin about, you know, just taking the two-stroke penalty on purpose, which was kind of dumb. And the reality is when, you know, as the rest of the tournament unfolded, guys, when you think about it, now he took a 10 on that hole, okay, which obviously, as David Fay said, it was a no-moss moment. If he just keeps grinding it out, the way the rest of that round went, the leading score at the end of Saturday was, was three over par, So he may still be, he still has an outside shot to get himself back into that golf tournament on Sunday if he doesn't have that meltdown. And that's kind of the shame of it.
So in order, Mark, how are you going to remember this U.S. Open? For the Phil moment, for the USGA apologizing because of what happened on the course Saturday, or Brooks Koepka actually defending his U.S. Open championship on two different courses. And as you point out, he was 7 over at one point and was flirting with not making the cut, and he just kept it all together and kept his head down and just got it done.
I think without question, this will be remembered for Brooks repeating first time since, 88-89 when Curtis Strange repeated that anybody's done it, only the seventh person in history to do it. I believe when it's all said and done, the Phil thing on Saturday will just be a footnote, as will the USGA's poor setup. This was not like 04. Now, 04 at Shinnecock, the last time they played the Open there, when Retief Goosen won. That to me has been and always will be remembered for the for the USGA completely losing the golf course, particularly the seventh hole where they ended up having to water the greens, between groups, which made it unfair for the guys that didn't have it watered for them, and it just kind of compromised the integrity of that competition. And subsequently afterwards, the USGA admitted that they lost the golf course. They did that on Saturday. They admitted that they lost a couple of those greens and they miscalculated what the wind was going to be, but it was not as egregious as 04. To me, I always feel bad for, Retief Goosen, because that 04 Open was really more remembered, for that calamity. I don't think that's going to be the case in this case, particularly because, we saw a little bit of history yesterday with Brooks winning two in a row. So I he also was clearly, outclassed the field yesterday. I mean, there's no question about it. Really outclassed the field over the weekend, but particularly yesterday when in the cauldron of the pressure, with holding on to a slim lead, in what were still difficult conditions with a lot of pressure, that's how I'll remember this, the U.S. Open.
Yeah, it's interesting because we were talking earlier about the legacy of Phil Mickelson and will this affect it and that sort of thing, because that's one of the storylines. It's one of the follow-up stories people have written. And I agree with you, Mark. I felt the guy melted down. I didn't think he also took time afterward to kind of figure out what his story was before he came in and said it. He made it sound like he was, I knew if I took the two, I'd get out of there. And you know what I mean? Like it came across like he was trying to play off like he was I'd thought about doing this before, like some criminal genius, as opposed to a guy that just kind of lost his mind like a lot of us have on the golf course.
Yeah, no, like I said at the top there, that was really what bothered me more about than the act itself. And he had, six holes to think about what he was, happening.
Right.
I'm sure he was embarrassed by it. And he kind of thinking about how, he knows he's going to be asked about it. And, yeah, to come up with that, I'm not saying he didn't know the rule. I'm not questioning that. But, Phil, Phil's a very bright guy. I know there were some of my colleagues called for him to be, that he should, step away and not even play Sunday and withdraw and I think the suggestion that this is going to sully his legacy and the way people feel about him is absurd. I mean, I just think that's, this was one moment. This was not a cheating moment. It was, hey, listen, if anything, if the USGA and the golf, governing bodies decide that, maybe they change that rule so that it is an automatic DQ if you do something like that. That's fine. But, I don't think this, Phil's done a lot for the game. I'm not trying to be a Phil apologist in any way, because, what he did was idiotic the other day. And he knows that, but I think it's way, way overreaction to talk about the fact that this is going to, have any sort of stain on his legacy or anything like that. I mean, that I completely disagree with.
What do you make of the so-called young guns, guys like Jason Day, and Rory certainly is in this group, and I don't know if Jordan Spieth is in there, but the wildly inconsistent, you see flashes of greatness, stretches of greatness, and then they're just very pedestrian. I mean, and this group of golfers that when Tiger stepped away from injury and everything else, they kind of filled the void and people were interested in seeing them develop. Has there been enough development from that group?
Well, you know, this is going to sound almost like a, you know, I'm not trying to be trite here, but it's golf. I mean, it's, you know, I think when we've seen these guys make their runs, whether it's Spieth, I guess, in 15 and when he had that incredible year, and Jason Day in 16 when he won his first major, I might be messing my ears up, but when DJ, when his run, you know, to number one and all that kind of stuff, and then you see them kind of, you know, disappear for a little while, to me, to some degree, it accentuates how unbelievably great Tiger Woods was, because nobody other than Jack has had that sustained kind of excellence. And I just think that's just the nature of the game. It has nothing to do with whether they're working hard enough or committed enough or any of that kind of stuff, to paint it in a broad stroke. I mean, I really think it's just golf. I mean, golf is not easy. You know, I mean, once you think you figure, you got to figure it out. I mean, look at Dustin Johnson the first 2 days of this week. When I walked out of the facility at Shinnecock on Friday night, there were not a lot of thoughts in my mind thinking that anybody was going to catch Dustin Johnson.
Right.
He kind of looked
right.
He was behind him. You know, he looked bulletproof the first 2 days. And he took, I saw a stat last night. Actually, I think Golf Channel had a stat last night. He took almost 20 more putts on the weekend than he did on the first 2 days. He just all of a sudden just couldn't make a putt, you know? So what is that? You know, I mean, you know, maybe he got tentative, maybe he got tight. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's just kind of human nature. I thought, you know, I'll give you a good example. When you watch Spieth trying to make that cut on Friday, I mean, you know, he was way out of it, I mean, you know, from the start. And I commend him. He fought. And he blew a birdie barrage late on Friday. And all of a sudden got himself right around the cut line where he needed to come in, I think, with a couple pars on Friday. And you can almost see him tighten up and just kind of look. There was a look of angst on his face, you know, when he started missing a couple shots, a couple putts. And he ends up bogey-bogey and misses the cut. I mean, this is one of the best players in the game right now, you know. But it just shows, you know, that they're not immune to the same stuff that knuckleheads like us go through when trying to play a $15 Nassau on the weekend, you know. We don't want to dip into our pocket. I certainly know you guys don't. You know, but I understand from Dustin.
Yeah.
You guys do not like dipping short arms and deep pockets.
When Brian kind of pulls the wallet out, moths fly.
Yeah.
My first
communion money's still safe. Yeah.
Mark.
Now listen, I know. I let me tell you something. I know his brother, so I know how tight that whole program is, okay? I mean, honestly, the next time that guy buys me a beer, it'd be the first time, Terry.
Yeah, well, if you want to start telling college stories, Terry's given me a few for you, so we'll save him, though.
Mark, thank you, buddy. Great catching up. That's hilarious.
Take care, Mark.
Good talking to you guys.
All right,
thanks.
Take care.
Awesome. That's Mark Canizzaro.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.